Hello, and I'd like to welcome everyone to our first class in the Crash Course to the Laws of Shabbat. Today's class and future classes on this subject will be found at www.teachittome.com. You can find there an archive of all the live classes that we'll be having, along with any additional classes that have been given in the past and, God willing, in the future. We're going to begin this evening by going through the 39 prohibited categories of creative labor. These are the categories of labor which are forbidden on Shabbat. And in order to begin that, we're going to make use of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the original text of the Oral Torah. That means to say that the Oral Torah was originally passed down from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yehoshua, from Yehoshua to the Zakenim, and so forth and so on, meaning it was passed down through the chain of transmission from leader of generation to leader of generation, from rabbi to rabbi, until we reached our current generation. Now, in the process of this transmission orally, it became necessary to create a framework around which the oral tradition should continue to flow and attach to. And the reason for this is that basically through the various persecutions of the Jewish people that we've seen over history, the ability to accurately transmit an entire body of orally transmitted information became impaired. The number of hamim, the number of scholars who are capable of maintaining all of that within their minds, and the number of scholars that were given the pleasure of being able to afford themselves the time necessary to do what's called girsa, which means constant review of these oral passages and sayings and so forth that were passed down in order to be able to maintain this chain of transmission from Moshe Rabbeinu. All of that, with the various persecutions and the spreading out of the Jewish people, became almost impossible. So what happened is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, so Rabbi Yehuda, who was the head of his particular generation, this is following the destruction of the temple, decided that he would create a text that would form the outline of the Oral Torah. Now understand, the Oral Torah itself is the elaboration of the outline which is the written Torah. In fact, you can fairly accurately look and see the Oral Torah as being an extremely concise outline of the will of God that was given as a tremendous gift to the Jewish people. And the Oral Torah is the classes and everything else that rolls around this and fills in all the details and elaborates on it. Now that very concise outline contains within it innumerable details that are hinted to in order to be able to maintain that transmission. But like I said, with the advent of all the persecutions, to be able to pull out and be able to develop an understanding and work off this extremely concise outline, this became impaired. So therefore, another outline which is far more verbose was created that revolves around that, and that is the six orders of Mishnah, the Mishnah as we know it, that was created by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. As time went on, additional texts were created. Those are the Gemara. The Gemara is a commentary. In other words, it's an expansion on that. And over time, the various rabbis, the Rishonim, the early generation of rabbis, the Achronim, the later generation, which is still continuing in our current generation, they continue to elaborate on all these texts and expanding on everything that was written there in order to make it possible to accurately pass on the Oral Torah. The Torah itself still maintains this oral tradition. In other words, it hasn't disappeared. It's imperative. Aselach harav, a person must make for himself a rabbi. He must find a person that he can trust, a person that is knowledgeable, and that can lead him accurately along the path of Jewish law. There are many different venues as to which a person can turn into and get lost. In this crash course on Hilchot Shabbat and the laws of Shabbat, we are going to take the most general approach And therefore, in some ways, we may be a little bit more restrictive, where your own personal rabbi may turn around and be a little bit less restrictive. Hopefully, God willing, we'll be creating a framework that will keep us in line and in order, and on that, the various personal rabbis each and every one of us must set for ourselves can turn around and can comment and can specify where things should be slightly stricter or slightly less strict from anything that might be said in this class. So understand that I'm not paskening, meaning I'm not making decisions of law for anybody, but rather I'm just laying out a framework of the 39 laws. Following that, God willing, everything permitting, we will continue on to discuss the various principles of Shabbat and also the extensive laws of Mukseh. These are the various laws connected with what we can and cannot handle, and these were things that are set up as a safeguard to protect us from violating the numerous laws of Shabbat. It's been said that if a person masters the laws of Mukseh, I mean if he masters the laws of what can and cannot be handled, he avoids the majority of possible transgressions on Shabbat. So let's begin now with the Mishnah. This Mishnah is found in Masechet Shabbat. It's found in the order of Moed. In other words, the specific book in the larger six divisions is Shabbat, and it's found in the seventh perek, the seventh chapter, Mishnah Bet, the second Mishnah. It begins like this: Avot Melachot Arba'im Haser Echad. There are 40 different forms of creative labor, less one. Interesting, the Mishnah chose to use a somewhat roundabout language in terms of describing to us what in fact is not permissible on Shabbat. So what then is this roundabout language coming to teach us? I heard a novel idea from one of my Rabbanim in the name of Rav Arya Kaplan, and he explained that when it says 40 minus 1, the implication of this is that there are 40 different forms of creative forces, 40 different possibilities to have creation, meaning actual concrete creation. 39 of those types are possible to be emulated by mankind. Those 39 are going to be listed in the Mishnah as we continue. There is the one form of creative labor that is not possible for man, and that is yesh ma'ayin, creation ex nihilo. Only God can create something from nothing. Only God has this unbelievable ability to form the very beginnings of all that which will and continues to exist. The other 39 creative forms of labor are yesh miyesh. They are something from something. They are transformative in nature, but they do create distinct new elements, and therefore are deemed creation. It's in that regard that I choose to translate the word melacha, meaning the word that is usually translated as work, as creative labor, as opposed to saying work. It should be noted that actual work, under certain circumstances, may even be permitted on Shabbat. And that's a whole other discussion. But the point is that just sweating out of laborious actions, or for that matter, a person should carry out various other forms of labor. Those other forms of labor, even though they might, like I said, be tedious, or those other forms of labor which are similar to what we're going to list but are not of a creative nature, they are in fact permissible. I'll give you a quick example just to illustrate the point. One of the malachot, number 24 in the list that we're going to present here, is tearing in order to sew two stitches. In other words, that tearing is not permissible when it's ultimately speaking for the purpose of something creative, putting things together. But for example, if a person had a package of paper plates, he would be permitted to rip off the packaging completely and totally in order to be able to extract the paper plates. In other words, this completely destructive force in order to make use of the plates so that people can sit down to a meal is permissible on Shabbat. What would not be permitted, by the way, along the same vein, is a person would not be allowed to cut a slit into this package in order to be able to make a dispenser for the plates. As in this particular situation, he has done something creative. So let's now begin that list. The list of 39. Hazorea, sowing, planting. Now, by the way, each of these, as I go through them, I will tell you is a category that categorically describes a set of malachot, a set of prohibitions. It should be understood that this set of prohibitions may not necessarily come to your mind immediately when you hear the concept of planting, or zorea, meaning sowing. So when that comes to your mind, there may be things that are not permitted under this that are not immediately in line. Understand that these are categorical names. And under these categories, in addition to the very, again, direct violations that can apply to the categories of laws, and by the way, we will be going through each and every one of these, we'll be describing what in fact is the actual category, then we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of those categories. So now, in addition to these major categories, many of the categories also have minor categories called toldot. These are forbidden just like the major category, but for the purpose of understanding the divisions that are connected, in other words, the divisions in the law, the subcategories exist to further expand upon what in fact is included in the isur in that which is forbidden. Now understand, everything here we're talking about, the major and the minor categories, are all forbidden by the Torah. So, like I said, we're going to speed through, in a sense, meaning we're going to speed, but not with too much speed, through all the 39, and we're going to try and describe them as succinctly as possible in order for us to have something that we can keep in mind and work with. Nevertheless, like I said, for this first whiz through, we are just going to concentrate on a translation of the words and perhaps some basic issues. So, like I said, the first one is sowing. Meaning, the first one is planting. V'ha-choresh, plowing. V'ha-kotzer, reaping. V'ha-ma'amer, binding sheaves together. Hadash, threshing. That's where they go ahead and they place on the ground the various stalks of wheat in terms of their husks. And what happens is they would trample on them, or various other methods for doing this, in order to cause them to open up, so that the next Malacha, the next creative labor could take place, which is Hazore. This is where they would throw up this mix of broken shafts and into the air, and then the blowing air would go ahead and blow away the external parts of it and leave behind the good kernels in order to later be able to perform additional malachot, which we'll continue with now, haborer, which means selecting, meaning it then produced the ability to remove out any stones or any debris. So again, this process of zore, which is called winnowing, meaning throwing up in the air and letting the chaff blow away, then makes it possible for the next one, which is haborer, which is selecting out all the various debris. Now once you're left with just the kernels, meaning just the good, nice little kernels, then what do? You grind it, hatochen. Following that process, you turn around, v'hamarakid, you sift the flour. And then, following that, you add a little bit of liquid, and you do v'halash, you turn around and you knead. And of course, once you've kneaded, v'haofe, you bake. Now, what you've seen from all of this, then, is that these malachot seem to have a order to them. They are the order of making bread. It is the first of four divisions that we can make in terms of the 39 melachot. This is the order of bread, meaning the order and process that would take to make bread. Now we'll get into details as to why things are divided into four in a little bit, and to exactly what the concept of making bread has to do with what we cannot do in terms of melachot, creative labors on Shabbat. So, just so you should know, as we went to the first 11 is the order of bread, the next 12 to 24 are the order of garments, what it takes to produce a garment. The next 25 to 31 is the order of hides, it's what it takes in order to produce leather hides. And then 32 to 39 wraps up with the order of construction, the various things that are necessary in terms of constructing the frameworks and various other parts of buildings, etc. So, like I said, we've just finished now the first 11 that do the order of bread. Let's now begin the next 12 to 24, meaning from the number 12 to number 24, the next 12, the 13, the order of garments. Hagozes et hatsemer. The next is, as you can see clearly, is the order of garments. You first have to shear the sheep. You've got to take off their hair. Ha'amelabeno. Then the next after that is whitening or scouring. And when we get to the discussion of that, we'll talk about why I say whitening or scouring, which ends up being both of them, practically speaking. Vahamna pitso. The next is hackling or combing. Hackling is the process of combing flax. Combing is the process of, well, combing wool. Once you've sheared off the wool off of an animal, and once you've gone ahead and you've bleached it or scoured it in order to prepare it, you want now to go ahead and you want to separate the fibers and remove any particles, so you run a comb through it, and that helps to separate the fibers, leading it to the next process, which is v'hatsoyo, which is dyeing it, which is giving it the coloring. Once you've colored the fibers, v'hatove, then you want to turn around and you want to spin them together to make your threads and yarn. V'hamesech, after that, you turn around and you need to stretch the threads and you need to set them up for the warp. In other words, you have to go ahead and get them ready in order to put them onto the weaving machine. And when we get to those specific melachot in detail, we'll describe a little bit more about the machinery, etc., to put these things into a imagery that we can perceive and therefore extend into the practical. Next is going ahead and making two meshes or heddles. Again, it's part of the process of the machinery, and we will get to a discussion when the time is right. Then if you turn around and you actually weave two threads, or if a person was to go ahead and to divide up and unravel those two threads. Now notice, by the way, that in some of these melachot, on some of these creative labors, there is a description of certain minimum requirements in order for this to be punishable by a Beit Din. Understand that there's a concept in general of chatzi shur asur min haTorah, that the Torah still forbids even less than the minimum measurements, but it may not necessarily be something that the courts can enforce using the normal laws. In other words, without extending beyond those laws, which they do have permission to do at times. Anyways, as we're continuing from there, in addition to that, hakosher, meaning tying together the threads, vahamatir, untying, vatofeach shtei tefirot, a person who sews two stitches, hakorea almenat litpor shtei tefirot, a person who tears in a, as we mentioned in the beginning of this class, in this positive creative manner, meaning he tears in order to be able to sew it back. Examples might be to put something on a hook. You might want to tear open and then close it in a way that this way it, again, revolves around a hook. Hatzad Svi. So now, when we finish now the order of garments, and we are beginning now the order of hides, meaning the preparing of leather. Well, like I said, we'll get into a discussion of the categories, why these categories and what they mean to us in just a little bit. So continuing, going ahead and capturing or trapping a deer, this is not permitted. Hashohato, slaughtering that animal, that is not permitted. Continuing, v'hamafshito, a person flaying and skinning the animal, this is a problem. Hamolcho v'maberet oro, a person who salts it and works the leather. And these are listed here in the Mishnah as two separate categories. The Gemara explains that really, no, it's only one category, that salting and tanning, which is what these two are, is in fact the same melacha, and explains that in here actually belongs, in terms of the list of 39, hamishartet, which is scoring, meaning putting down on the leather. In other words, they take a razor or the like, and they would make a line across in order to mark where the cuts would take place. So that would fit there. V'amochako, going ahead and scraping off all the various hairs. V'amachatcho, cutting it then, meaning measured cutting, actually cutting it in a very specific way for a creative purpose. That then is included and is asur on Shabbat. And with that, we end this category of the order of hides. So now we begin the next section. And like I said, as we're rolling through the 39 through this Mishnah, don't worry. The crash course will keep going over the next couple weeks, Bezrat Hashem, and we will hit on each and every one of these, describe them in a little bit more detail, and give the do's and don'ts for each one of them. And in this way, God willing, cover all 39. Hakotev shtei otiyot, writing two letters. Vamochek amanat lichtov shtei otiyot, or erasing in order to write two letters. In both of those cases, these are all connected to the idea of construction, and when you go ahead and you want to lay out the pieces and so forth, if any of you have ever put together one of these desks that comes in a million parts, you notice there's little letters all over the place to tell you how to connect things together, and that's all connected to this idea. Following that, habone is construction, vahasoter is demolishing. Sometimes you need to demolish in order to build. Hamchabe, putting out a flame, vahamavir, and setting up a flame. Both of these, in constructive purposes, are asur, are not allowed, and connected to the process of construction. By the way, just as a quick example, how can putting out a fire possibly be a constructive purpose? So I'll give you a quick example. In order to make charcoal, in order to make a coal type of material, you go ahead and you burn wood, and once it's become charred, you put it out. And once you put it out, then you have this new material that when placed in the right situation with a chimney-like oven, and you go ahead and you relight these coals, they will actually create a heat that is even hotter than the original heat that the wood was producing. And that was needed in order to be able to smelt, meaning in order to be able to melt down and all the various other processes for the metals, the gold and so forth and so on, which was used in the construction of the Mishkan. And this idea of construction of the Mishkan and why this is important, we will get to momentarily. Any final act that brings something into the world of usability, this is a problem. The final act is, in many ways, the culmination of that act. Hamotzi mirashut reshut is to bring something from one domain to another. In other words, if you want to build a building, you got to go ahead and move the materials around and bring them into light, in other words, into the place where you're going to be constructing. What we have here then is 40 minus 1, meaning 39 total categories of creative labor. So let's go a little bit further now in terms of what is the primary reason behind these 39. In other words, if I was to look at the Torah, how could I, you look at this detailed, in other words, detailed in an internal fashion, outline of everything that we need to know, how can I derive out, where do I see the hint to understand what, in fact, is not permitted on Shabbat? It says, Lo taseh kol melacha, a person shall not do any creative labor. Well, what is it then that, in other words, these creative labors, how do I know what it is that I cannot do? So the Oral Torah is here for us to give us all 39. They are defined as 39 forms of labor used in creating the Mishkan. In other words, they're all of the various different types, the 39 categories of work that were used for constructing the Mishkan. Now, this idea that there's 39 and so forth, what they are, etc., this is, as they say, Halacha le Moshe Sinai. This is law that was given to Moses from Sinai. Meaning this is the Oral Torah, this is the law. But in terms of where is it hinted to in this wondrous outline that we have where all is contained, it is hinted to in the fact that there is a proximity, and as a smichot parshiot, a connection between two different things discussed in the same place, and that is that the discussion, in fact, the specific words, Lo taseh kol melacha, you shall not do any labor, is in the proximity of what? Of the discussion of the construction of the Mishkan. And for that reason, meaning in this, the reason being that it's one is next to the other, was in order to hit off and let us remember what was taught to us mouth to mouth, all the way going back to Moses, that we learn what we cannot do based on what it takes in order to build the Mishkan, also known in English as the tabernacle. Now, the four divisions then, what specifically are they? In other words, how do they connect to this idea of construction in the Mishkan? So let's go through that. So the first order, the order of bread, there are two reasons that are given by the commentators. The first reason is the steps needed to produce from the ground up the lechem hapanim, the showbread. Now, weekly, in the Beit HaMikdash, they would go ahead and they would place these thick matzah-like breads on a special gold table, and they'd be lined up and so on, and they'd be switched every week, and there's various miracles connected to this. I think an entire class just on the concept of the Lechem upon him would be very appropriate, but for the sake of this crash course, we'll cut it here. The point is that the making of this bread requires these 39 steps. And therefore, along those lines, require the first 1 through 11, and therefore along those lines, these 1 through 11 are prohibited. A second reason that's given is that the process of producing the herbs needed for creating dyes for use in the construction. The second one ties it more closely to the actual physical construction of the Mishkan itself, and that is that there are various curtains and various other parts, the clothing, etc., everything else that's connected with the material type construction, also includes the need for dyes, and the various dyes are not all, but many are derived directly from various herbs that are grown. So that whole process of baking bread could also be about cooking dyes, meaning about making them in order to be able to dye the material, and of course the various processing involved in dyeing materials. The second order, the order of garments, as we already saw the connection, meaning in the terms of what's needed, the process of fabricating the curtains used in the construction, and so forth and so on. The order of hides, well, this is the process for preparing the skins of the tachash. The tachash is preparing the skins of these animals. What is the tachash? Well, it's a species of animal with a very particularly beautiful fur. The question arises as to whether or not this animal is alive or not. Now, this question does exist. We don't really have a concrete answer. We don't have a tradition that specifically pegs one of the animals. We do have, though, various discussions as to what this animal is. And we also have an opinion that says that it magically came to be just specifically for the purpose of building the Mishkan and only existed for that time period. So either way, there are, like I said, certain designated characteristics of it. One of the most famous of it is that it has a single horn. So in that regard, many people think that the mythical unicorn may be connected to this idea. There also is, there for that reason, by the way, certain other animals then get pegged as possibilities, such as the narwhal, which is a whale-like material, whale-like animal, so that it grows a extended tusk. Actually, that looks like a unicorn horn, meaning the spirals that go out. Or the second possibility, perhaps a dugong, which is a manatee-type animal that lives in the Dead Sea, or excuse me, the Red Sea area, that also has an extended tusk. So either way, the point is that the animal that would be used in the construction needed to have its skins prepared in order to be able to line the top covering of the Mishkan. The Holy of Holies and so forth and so on would all have this beautiful covering that would go across its top, and this was needed, and therefore the process of creating it is part of the 39 melachot, the 39 forms of prohibited labor. Beyond that, the order of construction. This is the last of the four orders, the four divisions. This is the process of creating, assembling, and working with the beams and other framework in the construction of the Mishkan. So, for example, things like writing and so forth are directly connected because you'd have to mark which beam goes where and so forth and so on. So, those are the four orders. That is connected to the primary reason, which is the idea that the 39 melachot come out from what it takes to build a Mishkan, what it takes to build the tabernacle. So, for the continuation of this particular class, we're going to cover now two different malachot, two different creative labors. In subsequent weeks, we will move beyond that, and God willing, quickly and succinctly cover all 39 in the process of a couple weeks. So, let's go now. Sowing, hazorea, planting. So, what actually is forbidden? What is this category? Well, any act that begins or facilitates plant growth. Included in that is sowing, planting, watering, or sunning plants. As you can see, we're talking about facilitating plant growth, not necessarily the act that we're all familiar with of putting seeds in the ground, although certainly that is prohibited, but all of these other acts are just as prohibited as that. So, do's. What can we do? Well, what we can do is urinate on the grass. By the way, that is a machloket. There are some people who hold that you cannot do that. Now, and I'll explain to you, this is a very interesting machloket that teaches us a little bit about the approach to Torah that our chachamim take, that our great rabbis and sages take. First of all, the Torah itself, I mean, not the Torah, but the Gemara, sorry, which is part of the Torah, it dictates that urination on grass is detrimental to the growth of that. And in that case, doing so would therefore be permitted. You're doing a completely destructive type of force. There are certain scientific studies which seem to indicate that urinating on grass would actually give it some sort of positive growth factor, and therefore some rabbis would want to indicate that even though it's true, the Gemara says that, well, you can't urinate, you can urinate on grass, they would say, no, it's nevertheless, it's not allowed because of the fact that scientifically it's been proven to do so. Well, I'll tell you, I did a little survey of the various spots of grass outside my house where the dogs make pee-pee, and I will tell you all the grass is dead. So being that's the case, I will tell you that I think it's very reliable to rely on the Mishnah Berurah and the various other authorities who are very clear that it's okay to do this. Of course, I'm not saying to expose yourself in public and to do these things, but nevertheless, there is a prohibition against restraining oneself if an absolute need occurs, particularly if you are a man, as this can lead to sterilization, and therefore finding yourself off into some corner and taking care of your needs is at times an obligation and should not stand in your way. In addition to that, what else is permitted? I like doing the permitted things first. Putting cut flowers back into their vase if they spill out. Well, what happens is that once you cut the flowers from the ground, you've begun the process of death. So therefore, if you would go ahead and put them back into the water, then it would be permissible. Now, the reason why you can't put them in the water to start with is actually because of the fact that by putting many cut flowers into the water, it will actually start them to bloom. Now, blooming is certainly not considered, from the perspective of the Torah, as new growth, but nevertheless, because it looks that way, the rabbis don't permit doing it. But if it was in water, you're allowed to put it back. So if you're at your table and your kids happen to knock over one of the vases or so forth and so on, don't worry, you can put everything back in. So what can't you do under the malacha, under the creative labor of zorea, of sowing? Well, what you can't do is discard your pits and cores where they can grow. Meaning if you take a pit, you're eating and so forth, and you spit it out on the ground, for example, here in sunny Florida, or perhaps rainy Florida this time of year, spitting out the seeds on the ground actually will cause them to grow. Watermelons do grow here. So therefore, you wouldn't be allowed to do such a thing. If though you were to spit them out on your floor, you might get a good whip from your mama, but the bottom line is, it's not a prohibition because they won't grow. Anyways, removing rubbish and leaves from the lawn. Well, why would that be prohibited? Well, I'll tell you, because removing rubbish and leaves is going to go ahead and open it up to grow sun and so forth. So if you happen to forget your kiddie pool upside down in your backyard, don't start running over and putting it off onto the side on Shabbat, besides the fact that it may actually be muksa, it might be prohibited under the various laws of what you can and cannot carry around on Shabbat, and with discussion to follow after the 39 melachot. Now, placing a potted plant over, and that means even hanging the ground, over even hanging over the ground is prohibited. That means to say that what? That you can't take a potted plant from inside your house and put it outside, besides the fact that it may be sunning it. There is an interesting idea that plants, the Gemara tells us, gain a certain level of nutrients from the ground itself. So by putting it on the ground, or even hanging it above the ground, the open ground, what happens is there's a certain level of encouraging growth that happens, perhaps some form of tropism that will cause a greater growth to plants. I've never done the experiment, but I'm sure that if I did, I would see something, and well, maybe someday I will. Anyways, continue, specifically opening the shades for your plants to let the sun in. Now, it's no problem to open the shades of your room and let a little bit of sun in for yourself so that you should be able to enjoy the sunshine and go ahead and read a great sefer, learn all that you can learn on Shabbat, come up with some new thoughts of Torah, which Shabbat is the time for, without any question. But nevertheless, though, if you specifically just open the windows or open up the shades in order so that your plants should get the daily sunning, that is prohibited. Well, picnicking on the lawn, since drinks will likely spill, also, according to many, is forbidden. Although you are allowed to go outside, but be careful on Sukkot when your sukkah may be over the grass areas and so forth, so potentially things could grow there. Nevertheless, it is best when possible to put down some kind of material on the ground that will prevent these spills from reaching the ground. Here in Florida, though, it rains so much, you probably don't have to worry it. If the ground was completely saturated by water, additional water doesn't do anything. So, therefore, it wouldn't make a difference. So, provided, for example, you had a table that was covered with water, and right after a rain, and the floor is soaking wet, and you wanted to use that table now to sit in your sukkah and enjoy a meal, you'd be allowed to tip the table over, let the water flow off, and not worry about anything. But if it was dry out, if you waited and you didn't push the water off when it was still okay, meaning when the water in the ground was soaking wet, that is too late, and you wouldn't be allowed to do it. Go bring something, and carefully, don't sop up anything, and we'll get to that later on when we get to Dash and various other laws, and we'll leave that up in the air. I mean, the point is, soaking up water can be a real problem, but let's leave that for a moment. So again, so doing picnics is not really a good idea on Shabbat over the grass. Washing one's hand over the grass is certainly not allowed. There's no question you're going to go pouring water over your hands right onto the grass. You're watering the lawn. Whether or not you intend to do so or not, you are. Pull off weak leaves to strengthen the plant. Well, you may actually be violating various laws, but you're also violating this law, which is planting, as we said. The category, but again, the categories are just categories, and what we discussed, meaning the any benefits to and facilitation to the plant growth is what's not allowed, and therefore pulling off dying leaves in order to strengthen the plant is in fact not allowed here under this malacha, as well as others. Now, continue on to the next one, HaChoresh, plowing. Well, what can't you do? Well, any action of making the ground more usable for growing plants, including plowing, digging, fertilizing, and leveling dirt. When you level off the dirt and make it flat, it actually helps to let plants grow. As we said, again, you see this is a category, and many other things can fit under this category, so don't think plowing in the most literal sense. It's a category. So what can you do? Well, you can let kids play in a dry sandbox. Well, what happens is that as much as your kids are going to kick around and try and dig holes in the sandbox, as long as, of course, the sandbox is dry, and if it is wet, this is a problem. Don't let your kids in it, and there's probably more than one reason not to let your kids in a wet sandbox, but if it's dry, then no problem. You're going to dig a little hole, and I think it will fill itself right back up. They're not going to be digging to China in those little plastic sandboxes in your backyard, and that's okay. Walk on soft soil, compressing the dirt. That's not a problem. See, you can't dig a hole. You couldn't go ahead and jam your foot in and pull up some dirt and make a little hole in the ground. But you were allowed to go ahead and compress the dirt by walking on it. In fact, if you walk on it, it actually is detrimental to any kind of real growth over there. And so it's not a problem. So walking on soft soil is fine. So what that brings us to then is, what about pushing a carriage? Well, that's okay if you're going to go ahead and push forward, because the rolling wheels are just going to be compressing the dirt. But when you're turning, be careful. Don't let those wheels dig into the ground and start making holes. Well, then you're making holes, and that's a problem. Some people, incidentally, for the same reasons, tell you that you shouldn't wear those stiletto heels. Of course, I question if anybody should wear stiletto heels. Certainly a man shouldn't be, but even a woman shouldn't be wearing stiletto heels per se, as they're pretty dangerous. And that's not just talking to the woman, it's talking to anybody else that she might step on. Anyways, but it is permissible if you happen to be wearing them, at least according to most poskim, but try and avoid it, at least for Shabbat. And playing marbles on a mat or table is perfectly permissible. Just don't play marbles on the ground outside. That is prohibited. Why? Well, the rabbis explained that what happens is, in order to play a good game of marbles or to roll around some nuts on the ground, well, if you want them to roll real well, you got to go ahead and make the ground flat. Marbles don't flow real well into pits and valleys, although you can do some really cool things by making some hills and maybe some big gullies. But bottom line is, it doesn't work real well unless you've got some flat surface. So given that the case, playing marbles on a matter table is fine, playing it on the ground outside is not. Okay, we finished our dues. What can't we do under the malacha of plowing? In other words, on what we just said, plowing, digging, fertilizing, leveling dirt. In other words, we're making these little lines, ditches in the ground, so forth and so on. What can't you do? Dragging a heavy item on loose ground. Now, you may not intend to be making those lines in the ground when you're dragging that big, heavy table, but the fact is you are. And this is called malacha she'ena sarich legufo. In other words, you don't need what's happening, but it's going to happen 100% when you do this. No way. Don't do it. Don't drag heavy items on loose ground. Don't pull out weeds. Of course, like I said, some of these things will be not permitted under various other rules, not just this one, but pulling out weeds actually improves the ground. And the same thing goes for removing rocks or twigs from the ground. By doing that, you're improving the situation. Well, if you're improving the situation, you're doing what we just said. You're doing the malacha of Choresh. So again, don't take the categories literally. Understand there are categories of malacha, and this is included. Sweeping outside on the dirt is a problem, because again, you'll be leveling off the dirt. You're making things all nice. Rubbing phlegm into the soil, same sort of thing. By rubbing in that phlegm and making everything all nice and flat, you're making things conducive for growth. Preparing a pot with soil for potted plants. Just don't think that everything we're talking about is only outside. Even inside, even in a pot, if you're putting sand, you're putting dirt in a pot that's arable, usable for growing, don't do it. Now, as we saw already, can't play marbles outside, and there is an additional malacha that people may not be too happy about, and that is, especially if they are neat freaks in their own homes, and that is rinsing or washing all types of floors. I know this may be difficult, but you kind of have to let your floors go a little bit. Now, you could sweep indoor floors, in other words, our style of floors. No, I'm not talking about dirt floors and so forth. That's another discussion, and it's not applicable today, so we'll just skip it. But the point is that if you have your regular run-of-the-mill tiles and so forth and so on, you can go ahead and you can sweep them, but you can't start washing them. So, besides that, like I said, there are many other rules that you could potentially be violating, and you'll be seeing them and hearing them as we go along. But there is a prohibition just connected with this idea of washing the ground. And why? Because washing all types of floors was just a blanket rule, because a person might come to go ahead and even what? Think that he can wash even dirt floors and other areas that potentially could become arable, could become growable as a result of his actions. And with that, we conclude today's shiur on the 39 melachot. The crash course in the laws of Shabbat. We've covered the first two, sowing and plowing, and we will plow through the next groups as the weeks continue. And following that, principles and muksa, God willing. Hope to see everybody again, God willing, next week, 7 p.m. on Wednesday. With the help of God, may our keeping of Shabbat, which it says that if we keep a Shabbat, or two Shabbatot, discussion. If you keep Shabbat, if the whole Jewish people keep Shabbat, the Mashiach will be here, and God willing, we should all see Mashiach speedily in our days. B'mehera v'yameinu.